Hello, everyone, and welcome to the inaugural episode of Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach, sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Today we have a great legendary jazz guitarist based out of Brooklyn, New York, named Jack Wilkins, on deck to talk about his landmark debut album, Windows, that has been sampled by such great artists as Tribe Called Quest. And we are very excited to have him on and to hear all about it. Let's welcome Jack.
Hello.
Hello, Jack.
Yes.
This is Cliff. Will gave me your number to schedule an interview today.
Oh, yeah. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
All good. I'm fine. Thanks.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you for letting you take the time to speak with us for our new blog on California Soul Music. Very excited to have you. We, you know, have really been listening to your records and watching some of your videos and masterclass online and reading a lot about you. And just, yeah, we literally had Red Clay playing like so many times on repeat and just kind of understanding the history of where that's come and where it's gone.
Wow.
So very excited.
That's nice to hear that. Thanks.
How did it feel to become a band leader and get signed by Bob Shad and Mainstream Records back in the early 70s?
Yeah, right. Well, it was a thrill for me. I mean, you know, I had done a recording called Watershed with a saxophone player named Paul Jeffrey. Before that, it was sort of a record, sort of like The Bridge, you know, the Sonny Rollins, Jim Hall record.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah. It was very well done. It was very difficult music that Paul wrote. Paul used to play with Thelonious Monk all the time. And we were good friends, so we made this record. It was a pretty extraordinary recording for its time. It was really, really, really difficult lines he wrote. But, you know, we rehearsed it, and we did it. It was a good thing. Anyway, Bob Shad liked the way I played and asked me if I wanted to do my own record. I said, yes, yeah, sure. Be glad to.
That's awesome. Yeah, I just recently realized that he is the grandfather of Judd Apatow. I did not know that.
Right. Yeah.
So then,
he's a big fan of rap music, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, that's funny. That is funny.
And so after you were able to then get that that record deal, let's go right into kind of the process of creating your debut for Windows. How did you pick the songs? I saw you had Sid Corea and Coltrane and Wayne Shorter and of course, Freddie Hubbard, and then the personnel that you've worked with, your really great relationship with the engineer. And I heard that you recorded in 6 hours. Is that right?
Yeah, that is right. Yep, we did the whole thing in 6 hours. Well, I had been playing with Michael Moore, the bass player, quite a lot at the time. We were doing a lot of different gigs and recordings. Not recordings, just different concerts and, you know, clubs around the city. And, you know, we did a lot of playing, so we played a lot of standards. But then we started to get into the little more newer tunes, you know, like Chicks, Windows, and Wayne Shorter's tune, and we did a lot of different things like that. So we decided to do a cross section of all these great tunes, you know, Wayne and Coltrane, of course, and Trick and Freddie Hubbard's tune, of course, Red Clay. And then Michael had written two tunes, Song for the Last Act and Canzona, so we recorded those two. But we were going to originally do it as a duo, but Mike said maybe we should use a drummer as well. So he suggested Bill Goodwin, which I didn't. I knew who he was, but I never knew him, never met him. And it couldn't have been a better choice. He was perfect for that recording.
No, yes, definitely. Yeah. I mean, some great breakbeats in there for sure, and I'm sure that just changed your whole way of playing. You know, having a trio versus a duo too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it changed up the whole thing. But it changed it up for the better. I mean, it was really, Bill was just remarkably good in the studio. Tireless, too. He did some layering stuff on a couple of tunes, which he was exhausted after doing that, you know, with the cowbell and and percussion instruments and whatnot. It was beautiful. It was great.
Yes, I mean, it's a timeless record for sure. Tell us a little bit about your actual cover of Freddie Hubbard's signature tune, Red Clay. It's also one of your most well-known tunes as well. Are you happy to be kind of known for that and see the success of that track?
Because of Tribe Called Quest, you mean, right?
Yes, and just in general with the resurgence, I mean, on Spotify, that has a lot of plays on there. So just kind of your experience with that particular tune.
Yeah, well, you know, the tune is pretty straightforward. I mean, I, you know, it's actually based on that tune, Sunny, you know, Sunny.
Uh-huh, yes, of course.
Yeah, and Freddie wrote that nice bass line, the introduction, so, you know, that part.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we originally just did it as a trio, but then I played some rhythm guitar. I added rhythm guitar on that track, you know, some chord stuff behind it, which was effective. And then, of course, Ernie Wilkins had the idea of, he was the engineer, you know his name?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. No relation, no.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, no relation. But we were very, very good friends. He suggested we add some, I guess you call it, not sure what the hell they call that. You know, some echo on it. A phase, at the time it was called a phase or some such nonsense. You know, it's early 70s, so, you know, all those devices were just starting to come out, you know, those sound effect things, phase shifter and delay, digital delays and things of that nature. So, anyway, he just added the phase on that, which gave it a nice slapback sound to it, you know. It was great. I really liked it. So that's how that came about.
Yeah, no, I mean, it sounds killer. I mean, again, we've been just playing it on heavy rotation. It's just such a crisp. And I love hearing, you know, a song that originally, you know, was translated for one instrument on a different one. It gives you a totally different respect and perspective for it. How did you feel hearing that song sampled by Tribe Called Quest and Andy Stone, Chance the Rapper, 20 to 40 years later after the original track was made? And how did you find out? And, like, when you hear it, like, does that sound crazy to you? Like, you're like, this is pitch shifted up, it's too fast, or how do you feel about that?
No, I was surprised, you know, and delighted by it, you know. It's a nice record, nice recording, that Midnight Marauders. But the, you know, it was sped up, you know.
Right.
They raised it up a whole major third. But that's neither here nor there. But the thing about it was that they just took the very short section of, like, where my guitar is going to you know, that's all they took.
Mm-hmm.
But none of the solo or anything like that. So,
right.
It was very effective what they did with it. So I was, I was cool with that, sure.
Sony inherited the rights to the catalog from Mainstream, including your record. And for many years, the record was never reissued. All
right.
About Jazz says Sony's inaction of reissuing is a crime against jazz. And what do you think?
Yeah, well, it was a shame. Yeah, I thought they should have released a lot of those. There was a lot of great records that Mainstream put out that should have been released, you know. Some Bobby Ellen recordings and a bunch of others. There was some very, very good Barry Miles records, a bunch of others. I was disappointed it never came out. I tried to buy the rights to the record at one time. But that was a complete wash. I couldn't do it to put it out myself. And there was a book that came out of the solos.
Yeah, it's written by Hal Leonard Company, I saw.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have thought that Sony would have put the recording out as well, just from that. But anyway, that's what happened. And so I sort of forgot about it for years and years.
So then how do you feel about it being reissued again, first on CD by Solid Records in 2017, and then on vinyl again with We Want Sound in 2018 to a new generation of listeners?
Yeah, well, I was pleased, you know, of course. You said it was released on a CD by who?
Solid Records, I'm showing, in 2017, and then on vinyl.
S-O-L-I-D, Solid.
Correct.
Yeah, I know. I never got one of those. I never saw it. Huh, interesting. I didn't know that. Huh, interesting. I just found that out. You know, after I recorded it, I didn't think too much about it. I mean, it was a moment in my time in life, and it was a good one, and... But, you know, you go on from that, you start doing other things, and, you know, some people loved the record, some people hated it. I got a lot of different reviews from that one. Some people thought it was awful. They said the worst shit they ever heard.
Oh, wow. How do you take that as an artist? I mean, are you just, like, tough-skinned, being from New York?
I didn't care, you know. I couldn't care less. I mean, you know, critics and all those people, they don't mean much to me. They people have their opinions. Sometimes they're right, sometimes they're not, you know. But right or wrong, I mean, a lot of people like the record, and I thought it was kind of a curious statement to make. It's an interesting statement to make. Everybody was so baffled about the fact that I was playing these tunes, you know. And I never understood why it's so hard or difficult to play a tune like Red Clay or Windows. It's just another tune with a different shape, that's all. I mean, it's just another tune, that's all. I mean, Pinocchio is a certain amount of bars, but it's just another tune. I mean, that doesn't mean I didn't spend a lot of time practicing all this shit, you know. You know, I worked at it, you know, and I found different ways of approaching each tune, you know, but I was, you know, that's what I was doing. Once the record came out, it got me a lot of work, I'll be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got the gig with Buddy Rich because of that recording and
right.
A lot of stuff. I did some festivals and all kinds of good stuff came about it because of that record, and which I was pleased about. But, I wasn't thinking about it when Tribe called Quest put that rap version out, and then all of a sudden there it was, and there seemed to be a lot of interest in the original recording, which was great for me. I was happy about that, sure, but it's hard to really go back and, you know, I don't really listen that much to my own music. Sometimes I do, but not very often. That is a good recording, though. The sound of the guitar is beautiful, I think. It's a very good sound. That was
a big
problem, because that studio was huge. It was a mammoth studio, the record plant in the 50s someplace. I forget the exact street. It was a monster studio. It's like a football field. And it was just echoey as all hell. You couldn't. And I was playing a big, huge amplifier, one of those Roland, it was actually a Ampeg GT10, one of those big-ass amps, you know, two 12-inch speakers, heavy as all can be. You couldn't even lift it up. It was so big. And there was no reverb and no echo on it. It was dry as a bone. We couldn't, the first take we started to play, it was a disaster, it sounded awful. So I told Ernie Wilkins, the engineer, I said,
mm-hmm.
Look, you know what we can do, there's only one thing we can do, and that's play with phones. We got to use the phones. So he put the volume up in the phones, and we lowered the amp sound and got rid of most of the echo, plus with the headphones, put more direct. We could get our own individual mixing, whatever we wanted, so that helped everybody. So the phone sound was beautiful, and he put reverb on it, so it was very easy to play. But it was a worry right from the beginning because of the echoey sound in that room. It was monstrous.
Mm. That's why you have a picture on the album cover wearing those headphones, those classic headphones.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, you worked in so many great large studios. I heard an interview with you talking about working at Rudy Van Velder's studio way back
yeah.
when. And
yeah.
and you worked with so many great artists. I mean, the list goes on: Sandy Kay, Barry Manilow, Stan Getz, Dizzy Gillespie, Lionel Hampton, my Clark Buddy Rich, Brecker Brothers, Dude Sims, and so many more, Manhattan Transfer. Who was your favorite artist to work with?
Oh, I don't really have one. But if I had to pick one, I would probably say Buddy Rich. He was just he's great to play with.
Let's talk about your influences. I've heard that you're influenced by Joe Pass and Django Reinhardt and a bunch of other guitarists. Who would you say is your main influence? And what are your guitar origins of getting started and learning to play?
Oh, yeah, okay. Well, when I first started to play, I was playing rock and roll or, whatever the rock and roll, Chuck Berry music and stuff like that. But when I got into playing jazz, I listened a lot to Johnny Smith. He was easily my favorite.
Johnny Smith.
Yeah.
Classic.
Yeah. I admired his playing, his sound, his everything. He's by far my favorite of all the guitar players I ever heard. Not to say some of the others aren't great, Chuck Wayne was another one that I loved very much. And the early Joe Pass stuff I liked. I didn't love the later stuff with his solo guitar playing. I didn't care for that much.
Mm, of course.
And I liked Rene Tomas quite a lot, too. Jimmy Rady was another one that I loved to listen to as well. Well, there's a bunch, But, yeah, I like Django Reinhardt. Of course, who didn't like Wes? Who didn't like that? How could you not like that? So the early George Benson stuff was great, too. That was really spectacular shit. There's others. There's a lot of others. But those are the ones that I really love the most. Johnny Smith. Howard Roberts was another one that I loved a lot, too.
Yeah, a lot of great musicians there. And some records that will most certainly be digging back into with the rise of online music, everything is accessible at your fingertips now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it wasn't so easy then. You had to scour the record stores finding stuff that, but now it's all, everybody can find anything anywhere all the time. Tal Follow, of course, was another one that made me, I loved very much. I'm a guitar fan. I like, if you can play the guitar, you got my vote, because I know how difficult it is to play that thing,
Yes, yeah, it's a lifelong learning. You're always continually to improve.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure.
So as a band leader, I think you've done 14 albums. You've had 22 albums as a sideman, maybe more, 36 albums total under your belt. Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite record that you've made or been on?
Yeah, I go from... That's a good question. I change sometimes. Sometimes this is my favorite. Next week, another one is my favorite. I actually like my Christmas record a lot. And I also like my Alien Army record also very much.
Maybe a Christmas record, there are so many, especially in the jazz idiom. What do you love about your Christmas album the most? And what makes that special to you?
I just think it's heartfelt. It was very, very heartfelt for me to do that. Right? That wasn't I just played the music as I felt it. It was a home recording, and it was done out of just sheer fun and love of the music. I think that's all. That's why I liked it so much. Alien Army was like that too, I liked another recording I made called Keep in Touch with Kenny Drew Jr. He's on that one. I like that one quite a lot, too. Yeah. A lot of people tell me that Trio Watt record is their favorite. I don't know. I don't care for it. I don't really love that record that much. I keep wondering why people love it so much. I can't figure it out. But, it's okay. It's all right. I think it's okay.
Well, it's very subjective. I mean, that's why beauty is in the eye of the beholder. You may see it totally different than someone else seeing it. And plus, you were in it, so you see it differently than the external world.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
But besides records that you made, were there any favorite records of just things you've been on? Like with all these greats that you played with, was there anything that stands out in your mind? Like, man, that was a crazy session, or I was.
The record I made with Paul Jeffrey is by far my favorite sideman record. It's very, very, very difficult music, and I'm proud of that one because it's I did well to play it. I was very pleased that I was proud of it. Very proud of that. I'm also, there's another record I made with this vibraphone player called Ted Pilsecker, which is called Destinations, which I like that record quite a lot too. And the first record I ever made was with Barry Miles, which I like also. There's some great music on that record. I like that record too. There's a bunch. Some records I made with singers as well. I like to. Yeah.
Who's your favorite singer to work with?
Oh, well, that's an impossible one. I don't. Jake Clayton. Jake Clayton, perhaps. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can see that. But, I mean, you've played with some of the great singers, even on one-off dates. Is there anyone that stands out in your mind?
Yeah. I love the way Montana King sang.
Mm-hmm.
I also loved Nancy Murano was a good singer too. He's a good singer. A few others, I don't know, but I would have to say Jake Clayton was my favorite. You know, I like the way she said, I like her phrasing and everything. Nice connection I had with her.
So you haven't had any new recordings out in the last couple of years. Do you know, like, if you plan on doing anything else, and what's keeping you busy these days? I know you were teaching for a few institutes, and are you still doing that?
Yeah, still doing that. Well, not right now.
Well, of course.
Yeah, I'm still doing that. And, yeah, I had a record called I Was Born in Love With You. I don't know if you know that one.
No, I'm not familiar.
Yeah, it was made in France. It's very nice. But, you know, recording hasn't been happening much. You know, nobody buys records anymore anyway.
But, I mean, do you feel like you would still record even just for yourself? Like,
sure, I would too. I would, yes, absolutely, without a doubt, undoubtedly. I actually like this other record I made called Until It's Time also. That's a nice, very nice recording. I like that one too. I forgot about that one. That was done out of sheer... That was something I put together, and it was completely my own doing, meaning I got the musicians, I picked the tunes, I made the arrangements. It was all my doing. So I'm very fond of that one too. Yeah. But you know, recordings. I don't know. No, there's some records still come out, but there's not a whole lot of recording. The recording industry is not really doing much now, is it?
It's changed. It's evolved. I mean, a lot of it is online and a lot of streaming, but still a lot of content coming out. I think 300,000 new records come out a week or something like that.
Oh, so.
But, I mean, they're not all good. I mean, there's a lot of white noise out there because the barrier of making records on your own is very low, so you have people on their phones just recording something with people that are recording in Capitol A studios, so it's a wide array.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a different world. Yeah, it's a different kind of stuff. Yeah, well, that's different. But, you know, anybody can do it now. If they have Pro Tools or even a phone, they can make a recording. It's weird.
Yeah. The phone used to just be for calls. Now it's almost not for calls at all.
Yeah.
Would you have any advice, being in the industry, you know, many, many years, to new musicians coming up, even though the industry has changed, I mean, just around... You know, the fundamentals haven't changed of being able to read and to learn your craft and things like that. Like, do you have any advice you would give to an up-and-coming musician creating their own art?
You just said it yourself. Just learn your craft. I think that's basic. That's all I'd say to somebody. I have a lot of students that like that. That I tell, you know, they ask me and I tell them, look, what I did was different. You're living in a different world than me, so... I can't give you advice on what to do, but I know this, that if you don't have your basic fundamentals down, you know, you're going to have a hard time. It's you got to get your professional skills in order, I think. But having said that, I'm not even sure of that anymore.
Of course. If you could go back, would you change anything? Would you do anything different in hindsight?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know what I could do different. That's a good question.
When you started out in music, did you think that you would last this long in that career?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I didn't really want to do much else. I mean, that was all I really wanted to do. imagine that. Although I must admit there were some things I had interest in to do, but outside of music. But generally speaking, no, I didn't think there was not much outside. I knew I was going to be doing this for my life. It's what I could do well. So, I just can't imagine not doing it.
Coming out with your veteran, how do you feel about that period of jazz?
It was a creative time. It was very creative. Yeah, the time was good. It was people were experimenting with different stuff. There was a lot of places to try out stuff. Earning a living wasn't so extravagant as it is. You could actually live in the city and not be, bogged down with paying this astronomical rents. You could actually try things, different things. There were a lot of little places to play too, lots of places, to work out different music. And I played with all kinds of different bands, so I know how that is. It was good, I was able to get a lot of different experiences, fusion bands, rock bands, Brazilian groups, all kinds of stuff, Cuban music. I played so many different kinds of classical stuff. They don't have that. That's not really happening now. Everybody specializes in a certain thing, it seems to me. Actually, I'm not even so sure of that anymore. But, the time in those days, it was definitely more placed for creativity, You could try stuff that wasn't end all be all. Now everything has to be a big success.
No, yeah, I agree. I think that experimentation made some very interesting records. Record companies gave more artists a chance to really grow into their art, and maybe it took to their fifth record or something before they really popped. And we don't have that now.
No, we don't. That's right. I mean, even Bill Evans said that. When he first started recording, he said he didn't want to do another record for a while because he didn't have anything new to say. That's fascinating coming from a guy like that, him to say something like that. Yeah, but he meant it. He said, I don't have anything particularly important to say right now, so I'm going to wait. It wasn't the end of the world if you didn't record every week.
I think you should definitely, speak when you have something to say.
Oh, absolutely. Like, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us. We really appreciate, again, hearing your life story and your career track and really this landmark album that we think is so great and more people need to listen to, and we're excited to be able to do more, a story around it and around you, and we'll most certainly make sure to follow up with you once the story is done and out so that you have it.
Well, wonderful. Thank you, man. That's very kind of you. I enjoyed it. Thanks very much, man.
Awesome. Well, you're most welcome. Enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll be talking to you soon.
I look forward to it, Cliff. Thanks again.
Thanks, Jack. Have a good one.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We'd like to thank everyone for taking the time to listen in to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach. We'd like to thank our guest, Jack Wilkins, for being on air today. We'd also like to thank our engineer, Tim Hall, and 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording, as well as our sponsor, California Soul Music. If you like this and you want to hear more, you can check it out online by visiting www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves. Until next time, this is Cliff Beach signing off.